Now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain right here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Every show has a theme. Today's theme is what's going on with America. My first guest looked at campaign spending on the midterm elections. We addressed the question, did the contributors get their money's worth? And we also looked at where the money really comes from. My second guest predicted the housing bubble bursting before it happened. He believes that America is on an unsustainable path and that we must take steps as individuals to protect what wealth we still have left. If you want to join in the conversation, call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the county, it's area code 805-639-0008. Charles Goyette is a New York Times best-selling author, and he spent many years as a popular Phoenix radio personality. Charles is widely known as America's most independent talk show host because he insists on holding all politicians accountable regardless of the party. Charles has sounded the alarm for the mortgage bubble well in advance of the calamity. As I said before, he's been on numerous television networks from Fox to CNN to MSNBC to PBS. He is an inaugural member of the board of directors of the Leonardo da Vinci Society for the Study of Thinking. Billy the Brain likes that. And he has also completed a screenplay on the life of the famous American seer Edgar Cayce. We'll talk about that if we have time. Charles has two sons, Michael and Stephen. He and his wife live in Scottsdale, Arizona. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
Bill, it is great to talk to you again. How are you?
It's great to have you back on the show. I'm doing fine, and things have changed a little bit since the last time you were on, and we want to get into that. But first, let's go back to one thing that you're quoted as saying. You're saying America's debt is a powder keg, and it's about to blow. It's lit by the rush of bailouts and stimulus spending. We're about to go into QE2, which is quantitative easing 2. So explain what you mean by this statement, and what path are we headed down?
Well, we're headed down the path of more money creation by the Federal Reserve. In fact, a little later on this afternoon, they're going to announce another program, we're told, of quantitative easing. Quantitative easing, these guys are very, very good at euphemisms. Let me rattle some off for you. You've got tarping, quantitative easing, deficit accommodating, liquidity operations, and all boiled down, it means that they're creating more money.
So yeah.
They're effectively printing money in the digital manner that it is done today. So we've got more of that going on. We have a big problem. We're closing in here. In fact, the new Congress is going to greet the statutory debt limit weeks after they take office. We've got a statutory debt limit here of the visible portion of the debt, the part that is visible above the water, much less the invisible portion submerged below the waterline. We've got a visible debt of $14.3 trillion. We're racing toward that right now. And new Congress or not, they're going to have to raise that debt ceiling once again. This will be the fourth time in Obama's term, which is really nothing because Bush presided over 7 increases in the national debt ceiling. So the country is simply out of control in terms of spending, in my view.
Well, absolutely. So if you look at the last 10 years, 8 years of the Bush administration, 2 years of the Obama administration, we've had 9 increases in the debt ceiling?
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a phenomenal and very disheartening thing. So what does this all mean to you and me on the street? I mean, okay, yes, I know that we're printing money, and yes, intuitively, at some point, that's going to create inflation, but we're really not seeing it. According to the government statistics that you look at, really what the Fed is going to announce today at the Federal Open Market Committee meeting is they're worried about deflation, the absolute opposite of inflation.
Yeah, they're usually fighting the last war, you know. They were fighting the last war in the summer of June of 2008, a couple of years ago. Gold hit a new all-time high, broke through 1,000. You remember oil was $147 a barrel in July, and
yep.
They said, "Oh, you know, we've got to tighten up. We've got to tighten up." And 3 months later, in September, you know, everything collapsed. So, I mean, it's like generals fighting the last war. I'm looking at a chart right now, Bill, of commodity prices, and I mean, you know, these aren't prices you find in the grocery store when you go to find things. These are just the raw materials themselves
right.
from the last year.
Mm-hmm.
The real cost of raw materials that hasn't even shown up in the grocery store. I mean, you look at in the last year, let's say oats up 14%, No, I beg your pardon. Corn's up 14, oats up 68%, wheat up 74%, canola oil up 36%, just the raw materials. Now, it takes a while for that those price increases to work their way through to the consumer level, but it's the same thing with energy. You've got energy costs that gasoline up 25%, natural gas up 15%, heating oil up 29%. You've got overall in the last year, food costs are up 48% on the raw material level. Energy costs up 23% on average on the raw material level. So I think it's pretty safe to say by the time those costs work their way through the production and delivery cycle to consumer goods and so on, the first quarter of this year is going to see prices running up substantially.
All right, and those are very interesting statistics. We're talking to Charles Goyette, everybody. Let's take a look and break down those statistics just so we're talking about the same thing. Right. Are you looking at seasonally adjusted, and over what time period are you looking at
over
these
12
increases?
Months.
12 months.
October of 09 to October of...
to September of 2010. Okay, so it is a 12-month period, and it has been adjusted for seasonality. All right, so I guess my next question to you is, just in general, taking a step back, are you a fatalist or a realist when it comes to this economy?
Well, I've never thought of it in those terms. I'm kind of, you know, I'm kind of like a guy, I feel like you can tell me whether this is a fatalist or a realist. Because I don't say we're doomed, and you know, everybody needs to be very, very afraid. But I do feel as though I've gone to the trouble to go down the road for peace and look around the bend, and we're here racing down the road here at 60, 70 miles an hour, and I've actually been down that road. I've taken a walk down the road around the curve, and I've seen that the bridge is out. And so I come back, and I'm flagging people down, and to say, you know, there's a bridge out around the curve, and you might want to take a detour. I'm not sure that that's fatalistic or even fear-mongering, but it just says, you know, that we've got to have a change of course. Now, if you're, you know, panicky, if you're prone to panics and somebody flags you down and says the bridge is out ahead and you panic about it, I guess that's just a personal problem of your psychological orientation, but it seems should be very pleasing that you can find an alternative, right?
Absolutely, and we want to take a look at those alternatives. All right, so you're forecasting inflation, and one can see that. I mean, the data is clearly going to indicate you print this much money, there is going to be inflation at some point. Many of these so-called pundits are predicting, though, that it's 12 months down the road. So my question is this. We're unwinding from all this debt. We've got this inflation that's looming, and I think we can all agree at some point we're going to have inflation. To what degree, I'm not sure. How do you prosper? Where do you go to protect the wealth that you still have remaining so that you can weather this entire storm that you foresee?
Yeah, well, the problem is the assets that are at risk, and the assets that are most at risk in environments such as we're entering are irredeemable paper assets. And it's not localized here to the United States. All the currencies of the world over the last year or so, now there may be a couple that have redeemed their ways, but over the last couple of years, all the currencies of the world have been tarping, quantitatively easing, deficit accommodating, and printing money. You have a globe for really the first time in history that there are no redeemable currencies. There is not a redeemable currency on the face of the earth. That is, they're all fiat money. They all have value and are used in commerce because somebody issued them and stands behind them and says you may or you must use this. So the first line of defense, in my view, is to begin to isolate yourself, to insulate yourself from dependence on the fate of those paper currencies. In the case of Americans, it means that you've got to wake up to the fact that the dollar is a piece of paper and ink, and that there is no discipline on the monetary authorities in creating more. Creating more of it renders it more and more worthless, as you've described, and that's where we are.
All right, so that sort of sounds like the Weimar Republic in Germany between the wars, where it took literally a wheelbarrow full of money to buy potato at that stage. And I'm not suggesting that we're going anywhere near that extreme yet, but I understand what you're saying. There's no currency today that's backed by gold or silver or anything else. So where do you turn? I mean, commodity prices are going up.
Right.
You could turn to gold and silver, but gold and silver are at or near historic highs. Nobody in their right mind wants to buy into something, an asset, when it's at its high. So where do you go?
Well, I think every family should still have some gold. It is, I suppose, in nominal dollars, you could say that gold is at its historic high. But in terms of constant dollars or constant purchasing power, it's maybe half of its previous high. Gold, or I beg your pardon, silver is half of its nominal high.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, it's probably, just figuring quickly, it's probably about or it's probably about an eighth of its constant dollar high. So both of them have a long ways to go, in my view. The problem is that the United States dollar isn't like other currencies. The dollars have already been created. Foreigners all over the globe hold U.S. dollars. They hold them in their central banks as reserves against which they issue their own currencies.
That's right.
So we have a special position in the world as the reserve currency of the world. And these foreign central banks are, you know, they're not dumb people either. And they're like Californians in an earthquake, you know, how you dart your eyes side to side, you wonder if this is the big one. They do this constantly. Every time there's a sovereign debt crisis, there's Dubai or Greece or Ireland or something, and they wonder if, you know, if this is going to be the one that sets off the chain reaction. And the real answer is that the dollar is the biggest debtor of them all, and the dollar is the most widely held currency of them all. And when there is a currency crisis, the dollar is in the middle of it unavoidably. And so they are, now for the first time, I think this is very significant, for the first time in years, central banks which have been net sellers of gold have reversed position and have become net buyers
in
these crises.
Now, who is buying up gold at this point? I know India is on the gold path. What other nations are buying gold?
The Soviet Union, China has encouraged its people to own gold, and rather than buying in the open market, they've massively upgraded their gold production, their domestic gold production.
Okay.
So, but on the other side of the equation, it's a good thing if you look at gold and wonder if it's a bubble. I think we could point out that it doesn't have the characteristics of a bubble here in the United States. The American people really aren't buying gold. I know you see a lot of commercials on TV and so on, but the people really aren't in the market. The markups on some of the things that these guys sell on late-night commercials are massive. And so as a consequence, they can afford to do a lot of advertising, and so they're ubiquitous on TV and on the radio. But in terms of the public's participation in this is nothing like the dot-com bubble. I mean, I remember the dot-com bubble, as you do, Bill. You could walk into any Starbucks in town, and people were sitting around comparing notes about, or day trading, right?
Right.
Comparing notes about the latest high-tech stock they bought. During at least where I live here in Scottsdale, during the real estate bubble, I mean, you couldn't meet a cocktail waitress that wasn't buying apartments converted into condos and trying to flip them. You know, everybody was in. In America, there are no signs of that. The American people really aren't in the gold market. In fact, there's a fair amount of business, people liquidating gold in the form of, you know, family jewelry and heirlooms and so on and so forth.
Ah, well, for every buyer, there's a seller. We're talking to Charles Goyette, everybody. His book, The Dollar Meltdown, Surviving the Impending Currency Crisis with Gold, Oil, and Other Unconventional Instruments. I guess, Charles, one of the challenges I always have with gold and silver is that they are really not that liquid. I mean, at the end of the day, if I have coins or if I have bullion, I've got to find a way to do it. And bullion's heavy. You know, I've got to lug it around and find somebody who's going to accept it in either barter as a form of trade. I do prefer paper assets simply because there are more markets that allow you to be liquid. What do you say to somebody who wants to get involved in gold or maybe silver or oil, but they don't want to actually own the asset themselves?
Well, I agree with you that it is not currency. Now, to say that it's a monetary commodity is one thing. To say that it's currency is something else, and it's not currency, which means it's not the current monetary unit of choice with which people conduct business. So you can't go into your favorite restaurant and plunk down some silver dimes and walk out and consider the bill saved. I think, though, that my core recommendation for everybody is physical gold and silver in their possession in some manner. That is, I mean, you carry it around in your pocket and you attempt to do some sort of transactions. But there is no telling how severe a monetary crisis can get. They can get very severe. Banks can close. Crisis conditions can prevail. And commerce can slow down. The reason that gold and silver are my primary recommendations isn't because I'm a gold bug and spend my time prospecting in the Superstition Mountains outside of town here or anything, or have some bizarre fixation on these metals. But they are what the great economist Ludwig von Mises called the most liquid commodity. And so they are prized all over the world. They are divisible. They are durable. They are limited in quantity, and so they have all the qualities of a good form of money that have been identified as far back as Aristotle.
Right. I mean, it goes back forever and ever. Gold has always been a medium of wealth, and it's always been actually an indicator of wealth as well. We're talking to Charles Goyette. Charles, are there other ways to play these rising commodity markets? I mean, you mentioned all the soft commodities, cotton, corn, wheat. They're all going up, and we know that for a fact. It's eventually going to maybe work its way into consumer prices, but that being said, what sort of play would you make right now on the soft commodities? Would you own any ETFs or would you go into futures on these commodities?
Well, it depends on the disposition of the person. I recommend it in my book. It's for the general reader that wants to know what is going on. Why is it that gold seems to set up shop at the crossroads of history? Why is the dollar perpetually losing value? So I recommend non-leveraged positions. People that are sophisticated, know what they're doing, and willing to take the risk and so on, can certainly participate in these markets in the futures markets. They need to be very careful about what they're doing. You can be absolutely right about what happens over the next 6 months or a year and be wrong about what happens on Thursday and lose all your money. So I do recommend position trading, what we call position trading, that you identify a major economic trend, you strike a position in that market, and you just sit and wait. You don't have to lose sleep at night. You don't have to day trade. You don't have to quit your day job, you know, and follow the market every tick by tick by tick. So I recommend some ETFs in hard assets and petroleum and things like that.
Very good. We're talking to Charles Goyette. Charles, in about the minute that we have left, my question to you is this. How much are demographics going to play into our economic future? You know, the baby boomers is the largest generation ever in the history of the world, and the first baby boomers started retiring back in 2009. That trend is going to continue, provided that the government doesn't up the retirement age from where it is today. What do you see, what effect do you see the baby boom generation having on the United States economy and perhaps even the world economy?
Yeah, at least domestically here in the United States, it exacerbates the problems of the unfunded liabilities. American people will find that to their bitter regret, they've bought a kind of a Ponzi scheme with some of these insurance programs like Social Security, and that the promises will be repudiated. And, you know, even if you means test Social Security, that's repudiating the promise. I mean, if a private insurance company said, you know, you buy this annuity and we're going to pay you at this age, and then when you reach that age, they say, well, you know, you're really a little bit too prosperous, we're not going to pay off.
Mm.
So I think all of those sorts of things, changing retirement ages, repudiation of promises by means testing of Social Security benefits, and even more, paying in deeply depreciated dollars so that you get the amount of money that you thought you were going to get, but it doesn't go as far, it doesn't fill up the gas tank. I think all those things are absolutely in our future, and I think all of these highly centralized social insurance programs will be thoroughly discredited at the end of this, and a lot of people will suffer needlessly.
Wow. We're talking to Charles Goyette, everybody. His book is The Dollar Meltdown, Surviving the Impending Currency Crisis with Gold, Oil, and Other Unconventional Methods. Now that the election is over, you've got some time to read. This is a good book to pick up and read. Gives you a basic foundation in economics and what's going on in the world ahead. Charles, thanks so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Bill, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you so much.